Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is a companion podcast to my Fox Nation special, Riddle, The Search for James R. Hoffa. Be sure to go to foxnation.com to watch the whole show. And now, Riddle, the podcast.
I cannot engage directly or indirectly in management of a labor union.
Disappeared from sight here at the Marcus Red Fox restaurant.
Hi, I'm Eric Schoen, and welcome to Riddle, the podcast. My in-depth conversations with those involved in our Fox Nation special, Riddle, The Search for James R. Hoffa, and my Fox News reporting. Thanks for listening today. For the next 25 minutes, you'll hear from Jeff Hansen. Jeff is a former law enforcement officer in Michigan. He spent years investigating what he thinks happened to Hoffa. Jeff says Hoffa was cremated at a cemetery very close to the house in Detroit, where hitman Frank Sheeran told me he shot Hoffa in the head. Jeff says that was the only crematory operating in 1975 when Hoffa disappeared. His book, Digging for the Truth, The Final Resting Place of Jimmy Hoffa. But first, let me get you quickly up to speed. Jimmy Hoffa, he disappeared on July 30th, 1975 from the parking lot of the Marcus Red Fox restaurant in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. It was believed he was headed to a meeting with Detroit mob boss Anthony Tony Jack Jackalone, a New Jersey Genovese captain and Teamster official, Tony Pro Provenzano. Well, in 2001, Buffalino crime family member and Teamster official Frank Sheeran, an admitted mafia killer. He told me he shot Hoffa in a house in Detroit. I met him as part of his proposed biography, which became the book I Heard You Paint Houses. In 2004, we went to that house. We pulled up the tiles on the hardwood floor, and we actually found blood. The pattern fit Sheeran's story precisely. The greatest amount of the possible evidence was in front of the foyer closet door, where Sheeran says Hoffa hit his head on the floor. 7 drops went down the hallway to the kitchen, where Sheeran says Hoffa's body was dragged out by 2 accomplices and was cremated. The FBI did find blood. They said 1 drop was inconclusive in terms of a DNA match. Another one was to an unknown male. There was no match to Hoffa, which is why I am calling on the government to release all of the Hoffa FBI investigation files fully now. Let the Hoffa family and the American public know what's been secret for so long and that we have been denied knowing, and retest the blood evidence we found using the latest DNA technology. Hear now what Jeff Hansen thinks happened to Jimmy Hoffa. First of all, Jeff, you were a law enforcement officer. What department were you at? Where were you at?
I was originally with the Detroit Police Department and then retired with the Taylor Police Department.
And you decided to use your experience and the investigative techniques that you used on the force in the job to try and find the final resting place of Jimmy Hoffa. What did you do? What did you come up with? Why?
Well, what happened was, I first got into this. I had an idea of where, from where Frank Sheeran said that he had killed Hoffa at in the house on Beaverland Street in Detroit. It was only a few miles away from where I grew up, and knowing the layout of the area, I had an idea that once Frank Sheeran had said that the body was cremated, I then started looking into the different cemeteries in the area. And one was very, very close to the house on Beaverland. And I went from there and gained as much information as I could about, one, the cemetery business and cremations. And I took that information from that cemetery and applied it to all the other ones in the area. And then, based on what Frank had said about the funeral business and funeral parlors possibly being involved, I took that information and went from there and found the most likely cemetery that would have been involved in Hoffa's cremation.
And most people probably don't understand this system and how it works. Can you explain that? How you have what Frank said was a mob-associated or mob-connected funeral home. The bodies aren't cremated at the funeral home. They're at a cemetery, a crematory, right? And you tell us about your research that you found out that in 1975, what, only one in Detroit had a crematory?
Well, yeah, back to what Frank was saying, exactly what he said to Charles Brandt was that a funeral home tied to the Detroit Mafia, the Detroit, basically they were able to help get the body cremated. Now, funeral homes in the city of Detroit and funeral homes all over the state of Michigan and probably across the country, they do not do their own cremations. They have services that they send them out to cemeteries, usually have the crematory with where their mausoleums are at. And what I found out was that how easy it was for a body, especially back in 1975, to be taken from, a house. The person passed away in a house or wherever they were taken, and then they were by an unmarked car. Back then, funeral parlors, they had unmarked station wagons, and they would pick up the bodies. They would then drive them to the cemetery, to the crematorium, and drop the body off. They would have a cremations box and a burial transit permit, and just that would get them in the door. The body would be dropped off, and it would sit there until the funeral parlor or the crematorium would put them in the ovens, called retorts. What I found out on that specific day was the cemetery in question that I pinpoint in my book is that cemetery was the only one in the area in the Detroit in the city of Detroit and anywhere near close by that had cremations that day. Other cemeteries had cremation ovens, but none of them did they have anything to do with the funeral parlor that Frank Sharon names, nor did they have anything to do with cremations that specific day. I found two cremations happen that day at this specific cemetery that is within the Detroit area. It is only a few miles going and actually 15 minutes away from the house on Beaverland Street. And it fits right with what Sharon was claiming, that the body and everything was done within an hour of Jimmy Hoffa being killed in that house.
It was interesting. We went to the cemetery and we talked to them. And of course, they had nothing to do with it. They would not have even known. Talk about the files and the papers. It's kind of loose. All you need is that transit card. If the police stop you, you've got a body in your car. You represent a funeral home. Employed by that funeral home, and you have this official piece of paper that gives you permission to drive around with a body.
Right, and that's what I believe is what happened. That they, that once Hoffa walked into that house, and the people that were there on the behest of the Provenzano crew from New Jersey, that they were there waiting. And I believe that because the house turned out to be not a flop house, but it was a rental. It was basically a house where people were coming and going all the time. And the lady that owned the house was never there.
Yep. She Martha Sellers, yes, her family said that she was living in Plymouth. The house was empty.
Correct.
The house was available that day. Frank said there was a real estater, who was involved. So they had access to this house. And the two accomplices, as Frank said, dragged the body down the hallway. We found the blood evidence, seven drops going down the hallway, most of it by the closet where Hoffa's head would have hit the floor after Frank says he shot him. And the two accomplices then put him in a body bag. He said it was a station wagon in the back by the detached garage, put him in the station wagon, and then they just drive right over to the cemetery. And if they get caught, they have that transit card, making it legal.
That's right.
And there's like no other paperwork. I mean, no one's going to look at a body to say, who's that?
No. And that's the thing, that all the cemeteries that I talked to, all the people in the funeral business that I spoke to, once a body goes in that, say it's a cremains box or a body bag, a cremains box could be definitely it's something that the funeral parlor gives to their people to go pick up the body. It goes into the car. They go into the back of the facility at the crematorium. The body is never looked at. And this is standard across the whole industry. They don't look inside the box to see who is in there. They just have the piece of paper from the funeral parlor stating that Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. Jones, they are there in the box. The box then goes in the cremation oven and it's turned on.
It sounds like.
And then the body is then. That's exactly how easy it is, how easy it was. Even today, I mean, it's not very much different from what you could do today, especially at the cemetery in question in Detroit. They probably had nothing to do with knowing any way, shape, or form that Jimmy Hoffa was going to be there. I'm pretty certain that they were just going about the regular business and believing that the people that were dropped off that day, which I found two women were cremated that day. And on the logbook, it shows that they were cremated at Evergreen on July 30th, 1975.
You wrote a book. It's called Digging for the Truth, The Final Resting Place of Jimmy Hoffa. And you really went into the details. Talk about that, how the records show two women. And I mean, how do we know that one of them was a woman and they just didn't say Jimmy Hoffa's Edna Jones or whatever? And talk about how some of the remains are missing.
Correct. Yeah, but what happened was that just the questions were very to everybody. I went to every single place and just asked the same questions. And when I went to this specific one, and I found the logbook that shows that Mrs. Jones, 89 years old, let's say she was 89 years old. This is a close approximation to how old this woman was. She was cremated on that specific day. The same day, another person, Mrs. Smith, 90 years old, approximation of her actual age, was also cremated that day. And in the logbook, it shows a list of different people that were either cremated and their boxes or their cremains urns were turned over to either family members and or funeral parlors, or even shipped to another out-of-state facility, which would be then taken to the family for burial or put on somebody's fireplace, things of that nature. What we found out was that going into that logbook, and I was given access to the attic above the mausoleum at this facility.
Oh, man.
And I found, and it's like, if you imagine it, if you will, there's an attic with the very, very, it's in a year order. It's set up to where every year going back to 1945 is set up on these walls. They have cremains boxes that were never picked up by people.
Wow.
And when I went into the 1975 area and I started looking for these two cremains boxes that would belong to these two women, and which on the logbook, it shows that they should still be there because they were never picked up. And this is a logbook I was looking at from, and this is back in 2000, when I was doing this is 2009. I was given access finally. And when I looked at the logbook and looked for these cremains, looked for the boxes with these women's names on them, they were not there. They do not there. And I looked at other areas of the just to see if they were misplaced. But in the logbook, there's a gentleman that was cremated there. And in his slot, it says indefinite care, meaning that he's going to be taken care of there at the facility until the end of time. I found his box there all lined up with other ones that were in correlation with the logbook. And those two women on July 30th, 1975, their boxes are missing.
That could tell you something. I mean, that is strange, especially when cremains from a family are recorded and the logbook, as you say, says that they were there, but their cremains are missing.
Well, and the one woman I verified as being a real person, she was, I found her death certificate, and the other lady, I still to this day am unable to find out if she had a birth, death, or any kind of taxes or any kind of background.
You're saying is one name of a woman was cremated. You can't find any record or any trace of that woman, and her cremains are missing.
And they're missing. And just like, for instance, all three cremation ovens at this facility can be ran at the same time. And it's been there since 1945. So that's the mystery there, to where this is what Frank Sheeran was trying to tell everybody. I think he just didn't want to put up, like he said to Charlie in his different confessions and his different information he was giving to Charles Brandt. I believe he was just giving as much information as he wanted to. He did not want to involve other people. He did not want to get anybody else in trouble. He wanted to come clean with what he did. And if there was anybody else involved, he mentioned a funeral parlor. And I just happened to keep going from that angle and found the cemetery.
Well, this, you know, having met Frank Sheeran and having tell me the story, this is, I immediately, of course, jumped to a potential conclusion that the name of the woman who does not exist, that was Jimmy Hoffa, that they came in, they had a slip of paper of a made up name of some woman. The cremains go in there, and maybe after Frank starts talking or some other point, because they don't want any evidence to be found, maybe someone goes in there and steals the remains and takes them.
Well, it could have happened.
Or never even put them in the first place.
It could have happened that way easily because, if you go back, if Frank, the I Heard Your Paint Houses came out in 2004. It would have been 2004. I didn't discover in Evergreen the different cemeteries that were involved. Until 2006, between 2006 and 2009.
Do you think, what's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me is that, of all the different things that everybody has said over these years, that the body was taken here, it was taken to Meadowlands, it was taken out of the state, it was taken, and all these different things, his body was put into a hole at a horse farm, all these different things are what people, I believe, came up with as to tell law enforcement or whoever they wanted to tell, investigative reporters. They wanted to give these people false leads. They wanted to give them information that they knew was not true, that would not lead to a body, because there is no body. And what better way to do this is go to a place where dead bodies go on a daily basis. And I believe this, Jimmy Hoffa was cremated at that facility, that one of those women, the one woman was used as a false name because they had that. They knew the procedures. They, meaning the Detroit Mafia, knew the procedures of this one facility, and they knew how easy it was to get rid of a body. And they had done it. They probably had done it before.
Yeah, that absolutely makes tremendous sense. And it is the easiest, simplest type of answer. You're not driving around Jimmy Hoffa very long. You don't want to in a station wagon or in a truck or in an oil drum, potentially, although there are others who say that was the case. But it seems a very likely case where you just drive them a couple of miles from Beaverland. You have that transit card. You say it's a woman. The body gets cremated. It's supposed to, cremation remains, as you say, are supposed to be there, but they're not because they took him and he's in the wind and someplace where that any evidence of his body would never be found, as is
correct.
What has happened so far.
Yeah, there's so many ways, shape, or form that in those years that, you know, somebody said, hey, you know, they knew where something was. They knew where these boxes were. They knew they knew where this was done at. Somebody had an idea of where these things happened at, or that day, and they just decided to, you know, just get rid of it. And maybe they're sitting in somebody's, closet.
Oh, man.
You know, somebody, you know, somebody's just got them and they've just been sitting there and unmarked. And
yeah, it could be. A friend of ours has Ethel Merman in his closet. Seriously.
Really?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Jeff, we've known each other a long time. Frank Sheeran. Some people say, well, he made this story up to sell a book. It's not the case. What is your feeling about Frank Sheeran, whether or not he's telling the truth?
Think about what this man had done in his life. And when Charles Brandt was talking to him and getting information from him, and the guy was, you know, obviously sick. He didn't want to he was wanting to get things off his chest. He was one of nine people that was involved in this, that the FBI had as being involved in getting rid of Jimmy Hoffa. He had to have been involved. Everybody agrees on that. As far as him not telling the truth about this, just wanting to sell a book, I believe that he was telling, he did lie about certain things back in the 70s and 80s and the 90s. I believe that he did not want people to know exactly what he had done because, one, Jimmy Hoffa was a friend of his. He did not want to admit that he had killed a very close friend of his. I believe that he was telling other people what they wanted to hear, or what, you know, basically telling them that, one, he wasn't involved in it, or two, he was involved in it, but other people killed Hoffa. He did not want to come clean. I don't blame the man. He would have been indicted and put in prison. Back into prison had he confessed to this.
Yes, he was. When I met him, he was, I ain't going back to college. That's exactly his main concern in life, was not going back to prison. And you point out, he had a news conference in Philadelphia before he went to prison, and he claimed that the Vietnamese generals did it under the auspices of the Nixon administration. And I have been told that was his message to the mafia, that he's going to prison and is never going to be a rat.
Correct. Why, you know, and obviously because had he come clean at any point in time, he knew for a fact they would have been able to get to him one way or another, or his family.
And finally, Jeff, has the FBI ever come to talk to you about this, about your theory and about what you found?
Well, I reached out to them before I started thinking about writing this all down, because I just wanted the information to get out Charles Brandt, I believed, had everything done. FBI, I took my information to them. They did contact me. We had a nice meeting in downtown Detroit, and I gave them my file and everything and all the log books, and I gave them everything that I had found, the real names of the people that were cremated that day, and the people that were named as being involved in this. That's what I gave them back in 2009.
But you haven't heard, you haven't heard from them after that?
No, I had not.
And I said finally before, but really finally, because one goal of Riddle, the search for James R. Hoffa, our Fox Nation special in my reporting, calling for the FBI, the government, to release all of the 302s, those are the informant interviews, release all the FBI files in the Hoffa case, unredacted, so Americans can see the truth. Would you be for that? Would you be for a complete release after all these years of all the material they have? The Hoffa family wants.
If the Hoffa, I would love to see that happen. If they're still, I believe in my heart that they're, and I believe actually what I've been told is that there are still two people that are could possibly be held responsible for this.
Yeah, they're in the Hoffex memo, and they're identified in Chucky O'Brien and Thomas Andretta. Chucky they both took the fifth in front of the grand jury. Chucky has publicly in interviews denied involvement. He would not talk with us, and Thomas Andretta did not respond to our request for an interview.
Correct.
And they have been identified in the Hoffex memo publicly already.
If the FBI decides that they have done everything. I believe they actually turned everything over to the Oakland County prosecutor's office back in 2005 after Charles Brandt's book.
The FBI turned it over to the prosecutors. That's when we went in 2004. Now it's back with the FBI. Now it's back with the federal government. And not with the police department. They told
me there might be a reason for that. I'm not privy to that.
Yeah.
I would imagine in my own mind that, coming from my background, that there's something that they're doing, and they are not going to release anything until they are completely 100%. Those two guys are either gone, or one of them turns and finally confesses to the crime, to being a part of the crime, that they were, I believe, an accessory.
Do you think we'll ever know the truth?
Yes, I do believe that I believe this is solvable if somebody decides to come forward, or if the FBI finally does put out exactly what they know, what they have in their files, because there is something that I think just to let everybody know, in the Hoffa family, of course, is the most important in my mind. I mean, I dedicated my book to his family, because I believe that all these years of people making fun, or, you know, or all these different jokes and the things you see on the TV, you see the movies. I believe it's finally time for no one to try to dig up any kind of horse farm. No more digging up driveways. There's no more digging up anything. We found what happened to the body, and there's nothing we can do about finding where it is.
That was absolutely eloquently and so well put. And that's my feeling too, for the Hoffa family. It is such a personal pain.
I think they've had enough. Yes. I think they've had, I mean, they 1982 is when they had their ceremony for him. I think it's time for the American people to say, okay, yeah, we figured out now we know the truth. This is what happened. And this is what and let's just be done with this. But now we have a total understanding of just how deviant and how what lengths the mafia and the organized crime would go to get rid of somebody that I believe was turning states out. It was giving evidence of crimes that the mafia and the Teamster were involved in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Digging for the Truth, The Final Resting Place of Jimmy Hoffa is your book. You can get it on Amazon. Just Google it. Jeff Hansen has been my guest. Jeff, you're in the program, Riddle, The Search for Jimmy Hoffa. We've done lots of stories, and we will continue. And on Fox Nation and Fox News, calling for the government to release the FBI files and retest the blood that we found in the house on Beaverland, which fits the pattern that Frank Sherman said exactly. Jeff, my thanks.
Eric, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Of course. I'm Eric Schon. Riddle, The Search for James R. Hoffa. Thanks for listening today. Check out all the other Riddle podcasts. You can also follow me on Twitter and Facebook. And just Google my name, put Frank Sherman next to it, or Jimmy Hoffa, and you can see the other articles we've written. And you can keep up with my reporting on Fox News. I'm Eric Schon. Thanks again for Riddle, the podcast.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.